Hipsters.tech, o podcast de tecnologia e outras modinhas.
Welcome to another episode of our podcast. I'm André Davi, your host, and with me today I have an awesome team. Beginning with Fabrício Carraro. Hi, Fabrício, how are you?
Hi.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Also, Marcos Mendes is here with us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, better now that we are here. And Maurício Linhares also join us.
It's really exciting. This is the very first episode we're recording in English, and we have an amazing person here with us.
Yeah, why do we reunited such great talents to interview someone? Well, that's because the someone who is with us right now, it's Dmitry Shevelenko, who currently is the Chief Business Officer at Perplexity AI. How are you doing, Dmitry?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for having me on. Really looking forward to diving in.
Thank you so much for your time. And I like to start this conversation looking at a more business point of view. From where I stand, looks like Perplexity is right in the center of a new dilemma that's happening with the way that we use the internet. For instance, previously we have a behavior of we do a search, then we click a link, then we visit a website full of ads, and that's the way the world works. But now there's a new scenario where when I ask some question as a user, I have the answer right away. I don't have to click in a website, in a link. I can visit the sources, but that's not necessarily. And to me, it looks like that most of people, or at least a lot of them, don't care about visiting a website anymore. They just want to have the answer. So I'm not asking you to provide us a solution for this scenario, but I really like to know how Perplexity deals with this scenario, with behavior from pre-AI era and now in the AI era, where people do their searches on the internet.
Yeah, I think the biggest change that we're experiencing is this era of answers instead of links. And ultimately, what this is doing is saving us time. You know, time is the scarce asset. You know, we like to say that Perplexity enables everyone to search like a billionaire, because billionaires, you know, they're the people that have, you know, they value their time the most. And, you know, this is really what natural language questions and answers are unlocking. And that is something we are excited to be ushering in. And we're just getting started on this journey. But when people get an answer instead of links, you know what it does? They have more curiosity, right? So if you know, just like we're going to in this conversation, you ask me a question, I start saying something, you ask me a follow-up question, it takes that back and forth, that natural language back and forth to get to the kind of, you know, desired knowledge state. And that's kind of what we're excited to be building at Perplexity.
Dmitry, you folks did what a lot of people would not have the guts to do, which is go straight into search, right? That is a market that has been ruled by one single company for, I don't know, over two decades now. And you folks just came in and made a lot of noise and have actually changed the way people talk about search and all of this, right? And how is it for you folks to be taking on like the big Goliath in the market and actually getting the Goliath to move?
I think if you approach the problem of like, oh my gosh, you have this company that, you know, eats everything in the world, how are you ever going to be able to, you know, compete against them? It's too daunting, right? We think of it through the lens of every day, can we get more people asking more questions on Perplexity than we had the previous day, right? And if you kind of project that out, you know, far enough into the future, you end up at a really interesting end state. And so I also think it's a different type of behavior, right? So the median length of a query in Perplexity is 10 words. When's the last time you put 10 words into a Google search bar, right? So it's not necessarily this one-to-one competition. It's really expanding, you know, the utility of the internet and getting people to use the internet in a way that they never, you know, thought was possible before. And that's, you know, very, very exciting for us.
One of the things that has been, and it's one that I remember when I had to look at movie times, it took a really long time for us to actually get structured movie time data on search engines, right? For most of the time, I had to actually do a search, find a website of movie theater that I wanted to go to, had to click on it, go from multiple pages and look at all the stuff that was all of these data. There were APIs available. But there's still a lot of data that is not structured, right? There is a lot of stuff that is out there. It's not easily available. And how are you folks dealing with all this unstructured data that's still out there, but that people want to have in a structured way, right? Do you folks have anything in the pipeline itself that is going to handle this real-time data that shows up and then it becomes part of the search? Because that has been like the thing that has really made me use Perplexity more than other stuff is that it feels very real time. It's very unlike other stuff.
Yeah. So something actually that just got announced yesterday is we acquired a company called Carbon that specialize in connecting large language models to other depositories and repositories of data, right? Whether it be Notion or Google Docs. And so I think the answer to your question is like it's incremental. It's not like there's going to be one magical invention that captures all of the data in the world and brings it in a useful way to answer your questions. But we just start cherry picking the ones that are most important to people and kind of build out from there. But in many ways, I think we underappreciate how rich the internet is in information, right? If you can identify the high quality sources, like a lot of it's already there. And yeah, there's just so much left to kind of do on that front that, yeah, I think bringing in other things enhances it, but it's not, I think, the most critical path for us. It's really, there's a lot also to do on understanding a user better in terms of their intentions and, you know, what they're trying to accomplish in order to eventually become more proactive and useful to their lives.
Perplexity had a great year. I think most people discovered Perplexity in this last, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, right? And recently, the company closed a deal with Telefonica around the world to offer Perplexity Pro for free for 1 year to the carrier's customers, right?
Yes.
In Brazil, Telefonica is represented by Vivo, and many of us on the team, and actually me as well, have redeemed this offer to be able to use Perplexity Pro for the next year. On the other hand, we know that the general public is still getting used to what an LLM is and what products like Perplexity, and especially Perplexity Pro, can do, the whole answer engine thing, right? So what has been the general public's reaction to this partnership, especially this large portion that I assume that people weren't really familiar with Perplexity or the whole internal reasoning of Perplexity Pro? How are they using it?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen tremendous adoption from our carrier partnerships, including the one with Telefonica Vivo for Brazil. I mean, I think many ways, the reason we do it is because a lot of people haven't yet heard of Perplexity, and people are a lot more likely to try something new when it's the paid premium version that's $200 a year. I'm talking US dollars. And so that's part of, you know, why this strategy ends up being effective is, you know, just, you know, basic human psychology is like, we have our behaviors and it's hard to change them. But when you get a really good deal, and you get something very premium for free, you're like, okay, this will make me like try it, right? And what we see with Perplexity is all that's needed is people get exposure to it. They run a few questions and they see it for themselves, right? It's not like you need, you know, we all ask questions in our day-to-day life. Like you don't need to be trained on how to use Perplexity. It's very easy to use. You just need the nudge to like try it. And that's what we've, you know, accomplished with many of our carrier partnerships, including Vivo.
And Dmitry, I want to talk about your career as well. Like you worked at Facebook, you worked at Uber. So you've been all around the Silicon Valley, we can say. And especially when you talk about Uber, you can see that it's another company that also tried to shake up the market. And it actually did it when it appeared. But it had some kind of resistance from taxi drivers and other companies, similar ones. But it managed to stay, and it's still a big company nowadays. And when you came from this type of, like Mauricio put before, David against Goliath, and you are trying to do the same here, what do you think that your experience as a director of business there at Uber brought to you or is bringing to you right now that you're working at Perplexity?
I think some of the commonalities is in our space, the enduring advantage is execution velocity. Just knowing what is the problem that you're trying to solve and being very focused on it and, you know, every day improving the service for our users. And I think Uber, you know, also was known as a culture where things happen quickly and you kind of needed to, Uber was a network effects business. I think Perplexity is different, right? It's not a marketplace. The need for speed is a function of the fact that the underlying capabilities, you know, what's coming out of AI research labs is changing week to week. And the ability to kind of win and capture consumer love comes from this feeling that every time you use Perplexity, it gets a little bit better. And so that's kind of been a huge driver of success for us. I'd say also, like, you know, the pattern match for me was like, I joined Facebook and Uber at relatively early moments because I loved the products and found them to be addictive. And I felt the same thing with Perplexity. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to, you know, become is this daily, very healthy habit. I mean, the thing I like to say is the two healthy addictions to have in life. You know, one is coffee, the other is Perplexity. So that's kind of what we're trying to create.
Now that we're talking about execution velocity, speed, and all those kind of things, I'm taking a look and you were joined Perplexity in October 2023. Now, when you look back, can you compare how the product was when you joined the company and how did you help to evolve the functionalities and also maintaining the ease of use? Because as a user, nothing has changed to make it harder for me to use the Perplexity tool. So tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, people, there's always three things that you're trying to improve in a product like ours. Speed, so how fast does the answer load, the quality of the answer, and the readability, you know, how easy it is it to digest the answer. And it's easy to improve one of those at the expense of the other two. What makes our work challenging and difficult and hard to replicate is moving the ball forward on all three at the same time. And so a lot of what we've done that I'm excited about is more verticalization, right? So this goes into the readability and quality piece. You know, when you're doing a shopping related query, we show you now product cards that make it really easier to then, you know, act on the information in an answer. We built out verticalized experiences for finance, for sports. So really kind of going at these core everyday use cases, we also significantly improved the pro search functionality that does this deeper search, gives you the most comprehensive, incredibly well-researched answer to your question. And so that's been a big driver of kind of differentiated value. But I think the way we look at our philosophy of building is 1% better every day. So it's not about, you know, just having, you know, one or two major features that like unlock, you know, disproportionate value. It's again, a lot of small incremental improvements, and those add up to making the product feel very different, especially kind of over the time span of 1 year. You know, we also, you know, more than 10x increase our growth. And so just keeping the service running at that much, you know, greater scale, that's its own set of challenges and one that, you know, we're proud of how we've handled that.
If you were to think about the research that your folks are following and the things that are getting implemented, do you see any things that are like, oh, these are the things that we're paying more attention to, these are the things that we're investing mostly, or are you folks like looking at everything? Is there, what is the decisioning on, oh, this is interesting, we're going to invest actual engineering to getting this in place?
I think there's several things that jump out. Like one is, you know, as we think more about how do we save people more time, making the answer more actionable is important, right? So we launched in the US this Buy with Pro capability. So you can just buy a product right from the answer and kind of streamline that. You know, I think that we're now looking at other verticals where you can, again, take actions right from within Perplexity. And I think that will be a big priority for us. But it's all on this general prerogative, like how do we save people time? How do we become more useful to them? I think there's also, you know, just a lot of thinking around, as we know more about you, how can we be more proactive in effectively doing searches for you without you having to initiate the search, right? Can we anticipate, yeah, what will be interesting or relevant or important and start to be useful to you without you even needing to trigger the query yourself? And so I think that as a theme for the next year will also be really important.
One thing that we saw earlier in the year, last year actually, is that Perplexity launched the whole publisher program, right? And it was on the heels of, I'll call it a misunderstanding about the links and the texts and the materials. And right from the start, you were able to secure partnerships with big names like Time, Der Spiegel, Fortune, Automatic, without Tumblr, right? But with WordPress, which is huge. Anyways, I was wondering how the performance has been for these publishers, and did this initial wave of partnerships help ease the pressure to help make even more partnerships?
Yeah. We actually just announced an expansion of the program with 15 new partners, including Los Angeles Times and many more international publishers. So it is very much a lot of successful traction. We've had like over 200 publishers reach out to join the program. And, you know, we've tried to create something that really aligns incentives over the long term. And I think that telling that story and explaining that takes time, and we're happy to do that work. But we're incredibly bullish about the program. And ultimately, if the internet no longer has diverse revenue streams for the production of new facts, it's going to be a less interesting and useful place, right? And so we think something like revenue sharing is going to be an important part of the fabric of the internet in the long term. In practice, though, you know, the problems publishers have in their businesses today, you know, none of that comes from AI or things like Perplexity. I think there's just been, unfortunately for publishers, like the history of a lot of digital innovation has like presented challenges to their business. And, you know, I think that pressure has trained a certain skepticism. When something new comes along, you're more fearful than, you know, you see the downside, not the upside potential. And it's on us to kind of communicate the upside potential and make it real.
Dimitri, here in Brazil, we have an old saying, a popular saying, that is like, you shouldn't discuss soccer, religion, or politics. Now that Marcus throw you a hard question, I will do the same and violate that rule and talk about politics. But the main point of my question is, you didn't shy away from all the controversies surrounding the US elections. On contrary, you guys told, no, we're going to give the answers when people ask about the elections, and we're going to have curated sources, really well curated, to provide correct information. How that was this experience to have such flammable content and yet try to deliver an unbiased answered? And also, how scalable is this sort of approach? Because I believe that this is going to happen in every country for the next century.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most important parts of Perplexity, and something that's been true from the beginning, is the prominence with which we list the sources that are used to generate the answer. And the key to solving a lot of challenges around misinformation and kind of, you know, more of these political concerns is transparency, right? Ultimately, like, a user needs to know where the information is coming from, and they need to assess for themselves, is this a reliable source of information or not? And the more, you know, granular the transparency is, the more empowered the user is. I think there's much greater risk in polluting information ecosystems when you try to apply your own biases and, you know, tell your users, no, you can't like ask us about this. Because, you know, I mean, politics is not like, it's interconnected to every other part of life. It's not some like independent layer that you can just kind of like put in a bucket. And excluding politics is itself a very political statement. And so for us, again, the guiding principle is transparency. We, of course, are always building systems to identify high quality, trustworthy sources and, you know, algorithmically approach this. But it's not about us, you know, manually having an editorial filter that is, you know, people at Perplexity sitting around, you know, saying we like that source, we don't like that source. Because that again, it creates new layers of bias. And I think, you know, one of the things we think about often is this Jeff Bezos phrase, like, your margin is our opportunity. Yeah, but there's other variants of that, of like, your fear is our opportunity. Like, you know, bigger companies are so afraid of being explicitly political, then they're implicitly political. I mean, you saw, you know, the Gemini, when they rolled out images, you know, they were showing, you know, black Nazis. That's the other side of the coin of like trying to control so much of what may happen that you actually create, you know, even more perverse things than the thing you were trying to protect against at the outset.
Did you get pushback from implementing fact-checking?
We didn't get any pushback. I mean, we had many journalists that tried to stress test the system to like get it to, you know, say something bad, and all basically, you know, reported that they failed at that, right? So I think the fact that it would have made a lot of people happy if there was a lot of like bad or you know, misleading answers, and folks weren't able to do that. And so I think that is a, you know, something we're proud of. Yeah.
And Dmitry, when you analyze data from different countries, and I bet you have this data, do you notice some patterns from like what an American usually searches online and what a Brazilian usually searches online? Do you notice these things, and specifically about Brazil?
At some point, we will definitely get to that level of understanding our users. Like, I think at this point, we're just moving so fast, and we're still a very small company that I don't think we're identifying those differences. But what I'll say as a general comment is there's a lot more that unites people. Like I said, everyone wants to save time. Everyone wants to get, you know, a fast answer. And, you know, we see the commonalities more than we see the differences, but I'm sure there will be that, and that will kind of inform our future roadmap and partnership strategies.
How many are you right now?
We're about 150 people.
Okay. Yeah, it's quite small if you think about it.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was like around 35 at the start of the year. So it's been, it feels big relative to where we started. But yeah, very much, at the beginning of the journey.
There's one thing that is just not just about Perplexity, actually, but pretty much every AI company that has a pro, a premium, or a plus plan, and they tend to be about $20 a month, right? But when you convert that to Brazilian reals, currently it adds up to a lot. Like, if you subscribed, and I know it's not your fault, but if you subscribe to Perplexity Pro at the end of the year, it's more than a monthly minimum wage here in Brazil. Is this sort of thing something that maybe Perplexity knows about and is thinking about in the future, maybe bringing some sort of localization of the plan for the currency? Or is it just, you know, the way things currently are, and who knows, maybe the future, but there's nothing really happening right now about this?
Well, I mean, one thing I'll say is like the free version of Perplexity is very powerful, right?
Yeah.
And most users of Perplexity everywhere in the world, including in the US, are free users. And we will always support, you know, a free version of Perplexity, and we're committed to that. So that's kind of, table stakes for us. I mean, nothing to announce at this point in terms of like localized pricing. Like I said, it's just driving the awareness of the free version for us is equally important to driving subscriptions for the pro version. And we want everyone in Brazil to have access to the product. And that's why we have the free version.
In that regard that you're talking about, providing a premium experience, even if it's the free version, you guys are getting closer and closer to specific groups. Like, you have the Perplexity for Educators course, right? How do you imagine the AI being used at schools? And what's the goal of Perplexity with a course like this?
I think for us, there's something that youth have that we start to lose, unfortunately, in age, which is curiosity. And so I think like Perplexity is just incredible for younger people because like they have the most curiosity, they have the, you know, most unbounded kind of questions. And what we love about Perplexity is like the more questions you ask, the more answers you get, the more questions you want to ask, right? And I think sparking curiosity is something that we see as a universal good. And you know, we want to grow that global curiosity, and starting younger is great. It's also, I think, just preparing children for kind of the you know, knowledge work of the future, where in many ways, like asking the right question will become the critical task, right? Like you'll be able to write an essay with the AI producing the text, right? What will distinguish your essay from that of your peers is like the framing of your questions? Did you ask questions in a comprehensive way? Did you kind of structure things together? You know, did you, you know, push back on it, right? That's kind of, those are the new critical skills rather than just like initial text generation. You know, I think in many contexts, like Perplexity is really good at getting that 80% of the first draft of something, you know, done much faster. But where the skill now moves to is that last 20%, that last 1%, right? That's going to be where all the alpha is. So, you know, we want everyone to kind of be empowered to use these technologies and to kind of focus on the things that will be the uniquely kind of human advantage over what becomes more commoditized, because, you know, these technologies can do that part for you.
You folks have concerns, and especially in the enterprise market, right? There's a bunch of big companies that own a lot of the data that people usually search for, the data that is going to be available. And there's been a lot of talk for years now that data is the gold, right? And some people might just decide, some of these big companies might just decide, oh, we're not going to make this available for you to search, which is terrible for the business, because we do want to be able to search for everything in a single place. And it would be great if there was a tool like Perplexity. Having really a lot of trouble seeing this, and in having all of this data available, right? Because you work at a big company, there are 20, 30, 50 different places where data is going to be, documentation is going to be, all of these things. And it is great to have like a single place where I can just type something and find, and it has been really hard to get to this, right? So do you folks see that this is one of the paths for growth for the company itself, or is it more on the like common user side? How are you folks thinking about how to invest in enterprise, how do we invest in the wider market?
Yeah, so we see knowledge workers as one of our most important, if not most important, customer demographic. And our approach to enterprise is making sure that knowledge workers can use Perplexity at work. And so, you know, as we build out the enterprise version, it's really about ensuring that you have access to all the information that you have privileges to whenever you're asking a question. So whether that be the best of the open web, the best of the internal knowledge inside your organization, that's why we have Perplexity Spaces and internal knowledge search, and then also external proprietary data sets. So we have partnerships with FactSet and Crunchbase, and, you know, we'll be having many more, where if you already have access to a certain data set, you know, being able to pull that in and have that show up as a source in Perplexity. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of what you said. You know, if we want to be the place where you can ask a question and not have to worry, you know, is it identifying all the relevant source of information? Like, we want to handle more and more of that. I don't think it necessarily means we have to index everything, but because people just ultimately, they want their answers to come from high quality knowledge sources. And I think that's the layer we want to focus in on.
Late last year, it was reported that you had a new investment round and that it actually brought your value, tripled your value to $9 billion. And I was wondering what you would say that drove this rise in investor confidence when compared to the beginning of last year. And how does this maybe new level could help differentiate you from competitors like Google and OpenAI's search products that have been pretty intensely in the news lately?
I think the I can't comment as to like confirming any specific investment, but as just a general comment about investor interests. What drives investment in Perplexity is people using the product, literally the, you know, investors themselves, right? So it's very trans, like we don't have to like present what Perplexity is when we meet with investors, because they all use it. And it's very, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, right? Like, it's all very transparent. So there isn't, and we're usually very transparent about the roadmap. Like, if you follow our CEO Aravind's, like, you know, X profile, you get a good sense of like what we're thinking about and what, you know, what may be coming. And so ultimately, like, the reason people invest in Perplexity is they use the product and find it valuable to themselves. They're also obviously comparing it against the competitor products and seeing the difference and feeling the difference. And it's interesting, like all the things that if we were recording this podcast last year and you would have brought up all these things that Google or OpenAI could do to try to like crush us, they've done all of them and even more, and yet our growth has been 10x, right? So I think that, you know, past is prologue. But the other thing that folks that track us, you know, notice, and we talked about it earlier too, is that execution velocity, right? So people who use the product see the improvement in the product, and then they, you know, project into the future what that means. And I think that ends up driving excitement around being part of the Perplexity story. I think people also realize that a product like ours, where people effectively come to Perplexity when they need to make important, meaningful decisions, that's a very valuable part of a person's daily experience to be part of. And there's, you know, a lot of ways to monetize that. You know, for us, it's, you know, the focus is that query growth and retention. But I think the more people use you for their more important decisions, that's a good place to be in.
One of the ways of monetizing these digital products is the three letters that make all the users scream. I'm talking about the ads. And recently, you began to test in the US, suggest complementary questions. And there's a fear that this sort of ads end up undermining the LLM nature of the product. And through our whole conversation, you seem to be very focused at the user experience, at how good it will be for us, and how fast. How did you manage to try to insert ads and then try to do assessment of how the users dealt with this new feature?
I think the most important thing is what we are not doing, which is we're not changing the answer based off of who our advertisers are, right? And so that's, I think, like, would be the cardinal sin in kind of, you know, experimenting with new ad units. Our first ad product, Sponsored Questions, takes advantage of the fact that many questions have a follow-up. And so we generate related questions that are shown below an answer. And we're allowing brands and advertisers to insert the question they want you to ask next there. It's very transparent that is, you know, a sponsored related question. But even when you click on that sponsored related question, the answer is still the organic Perplexity answer, right? So even in that case where, like, the origin is inorganic, we still kind of adhere to an organic answer that you can't manipulate or edit. And I think that's, as we zoom out and we think about the future of advertising and influence in an age of answer engines and kind of answer engines that become more like, you know, personal assistants, the thing that will not change is needing to get users to be curious about your brand or product, to basically ask about you. You will not be able to change the answers, right? Like the people won't use a product where the answer is up for sale, but you can, you know, create surface area where you can inspire people to want to be curious about something. And that's something that we're excited about with the launch. And so far, very positive feedback. You know, in some ways, no negative feedback is the positive feedback, right? Like, as you said, like, people generally don't love ads, which is completely fair. And so it's a high bar to make sure that ads are useful, relevant, non-intrusive, but still accomplish objectives for the marketer. And we're very thoughtful about threading that needle. And I'm encouraged by our kind of early testing there.
Dmitry, we can look at the users of Perplexity as the people who use it on the phone, like through your app, or the people who use it on the desktop. For that, you need to use a browser. So you're kind of dependent on Chrome or Safari, whatever. And the person has to type Perplexity to go there. So, like, it's one step more than they would have to go to, instead of going to Google, for example, or having an extension. So are you thinking, is that a plan of Perplexity to maybe develop your own browser?
I can't comment to any of it, but we are in terms of future plans there. But I think it will be a very interesting surface area as we get into more of these agentic workflows. But I also think there's a lot you can do to build, you know, save people time that doesn't involve touching the browser too. So, like, I don't think it's, like, necessarily the critical path for all more agentic workflows, but it will be useful for some of them, for sure.
I'd like to touch a little bit on what Mauricio and Andrea brought up earlier in the conversation, which is the relationship with the websites, right? Because it is indisputable how much it is a great experience to type the query and get the answers. And if I want to go deeper, I can actually go there. And you've been working with publishers, with the publisher program, and even the whole sales initiative and the ads initiative. It's a way to try to find some balance in the situation, but still there's the problem that Mauricio brought up, that the website might decide to shut you out of the crawler or whatever it is. So what other ways do you see that you can sort of try to appease the market and make them aware that you know that what you have is might be disruptive, but not only is it inevitable, but it's so good because people are actually finding value in it. And there must be a way for sites and Perplexity or every research engine try to find a way to coexist. How do you see the path forward with this?
I think there's an important principle which underlies fair use, and really you couldn't have open information ecosystems or journalism without it, which is that there is no copyright on publicly known facts. Once a fact exists in the world, the fact can't be copyrightable. The expression, the exact words of it, may have a copyright. And so I think there's like, that is true. And it is true that it is in everyone's collective interest to ensure that there is robust and diverse, business models for journalism. And I think it is, we kind of need to do both, acknowledge both at the same time. And that's why our publisher program is multidimensional, right? It's not just revenue sharing. It's also giving publishers access to our technology so they can build answer engine experiences into their product and make it more engaging and increase ad revenue that way. It's giving them access to Perplexity Enterprise Pro so they, as an organization, can become more efficient and streamlined. And so I think it's that comprehensiveness that is critical to our thinking here.
Dimitri, I have a final comment. I have to say, every time we interview someone, I also take notes during the interview because I learn a lot. And I see it's a way to tell my students, my grad students, what's happening in the world, what strategies they should use. And now I'm going to ask you something on behalf of my students, Alura students, FIAP students, and also the listeners of this podcast. A lot of those people want to create their own business, their own startups. And it's the moment where they're thinking about using AI to create better products. I believe that there are some questions that they should do now that wouldn't even be considered 2 years ago. What kind of advice could you provide to those listeners that are trying to build any product that uses AI and that's born in the middle of this already declared war between a lot of companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think the advice is like, don't overthink the beginning and just get started and start building. Because like oftentimes the best products and companies emerge from a problem you identify when you actually start creating something. And then that ends up being more interesting than the original kind of objective you had, right? But like, I think where people get stuck is this trap of like doing all this research to identify the perfect problem to go after. And that doesn't really exist, right? It's like it's the execution that matters a lot. I do think like a good place to ground your thinking is to kind of, ask yourself two questions. Like, what is it that's changed in the world that's like different now versus the recent past, and like so what's kind of the new thing that's possible that maybe wasn't possible, and at the same time what's the thing that's not going to change, and so you kind of, and I think a lot of the most interesting companies, like, they ride a wave that threads both those concepts, right? Like for Perplexity, people will always want their answers to be faster. They'll always want them to be more accurate, and they always want them to be easier to read. That will never, those will be evergreen, right? There's no disruption that will make people not want those things and want them all at the same time. And then there's all kinds of things that will change, right? The form factor, the modalities. I think just having your own opinion on both, that's where a lot of opportunity exists.
All right, my last question for you is, help us understand a little bit more of how the agentic future that is arriving fast will be a contributor to the experience of Perplexity, but research as a whole on the web.
Yeah, I think there's like a frame on it, which is like making it easier for you to do what you already told Perplexity you wanted to do and just like saving you time. So that's one direction of agentic capabilities. And the other is more the proactive of just anticipating what you're going to need and kind of surfacing it for you before you even need to express that. And I think, you know, it's really on a case-by-case basis. Some will be relevant for more verticals and needs, and some will be, you know, you need the more proactive one.
Dimitri, it was great. Thank you so much for your time, for your generosity. You taught a lot of lessons during this podcast, and it was an awesome episode. So thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
E você, ouvinte do Hipster, se você curtiu esse episódio, olha só essa dica importantíssima, hein? A segunda edição do maior evento de inteligência artificial e tecnologia do país já tem data marcada no dia 13 de agosto. Aqui em São Paulo vai rolar a IA Conference Brasil 2025. É a segunda edição do evento que já foi um sucesso no ano passado. Ele é promovido pelo maior ecossistema de educação e tecnologia da América Latina e, olha, vai reunir grandes nomes da área para palestras exclusivas, cases reais e mais de 10 horas de conteúdo intensivo. E o melhor, se você se inscrever na lista de espera agora, você pode fazer parte da pré-venda de ingressos e garantir o seu lugar com o melhor preço. Mas atenção, hein? As vagas da pré-venda são super limitadas e só vão estar disponíveis para quem estiver com o nome na lista. Então corre para se inscrever e ficar sabendo em primeira mão quando a pré-venda começa. O link tá aqui na postagem desse episódio. Hipsters, a gente se vê semana que vem. Até mais!
Este podcast foi produzido pela Alura. Mergulhe em tecnologia. E Faculdade FIAP. Let's Rock the Future. Edição Rede Gigahertz de Podcasts.